talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and from all the way in Belgium, John Lash is here, and what he is saying this night seems to be resonating with many of you out there quite well. Mike in Kent, Washington says, you know, I've long thought that Grays and other visitors envy us for our emotions and ability to experience feelings. Many abductions seem to be centered on forcing the abductee to relive emotions and emotional experiences. Or this from Area in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Mr. Bell, I'm a rather new listener to C2C. And in addition to saying I love the program, as usual, thank you. I wanted to thank you for tonight's guest as a Wiccan. I'm rather proud to have my religious ancestors given the credit they deserve. Today is our Ostra holiday, blessed be. So, and then from Christians, they see this, of course, as proof of angelic presence. So it's resonating, obviously, with a lot of people, but for different reasons. Ray in Fargo, North Dakota, I think, is about to ask a good question, or I am for him. Here it is. He says, fascinating guest, Art, but I have a question. Is the text that he's speaking of tonight subject to interpretation, much like Nostradamus' text, where different people translate it differently, or is it specific enough, John, that what you're telling us is absolutely verbatim? It's not a interpreted. Have you laid your own interpretation into what you have read, or are you giving us the straight stuff?
Good question there. I would say that the principal Gnostic text, which you find in what's called the Nag Hammadi Library in English, which has been in print now for about 20 years, edited by James Robinson, is recognized as a scholarly text and a translation of these Coptic documents. Now, I don't follow that text myself. I don't follow that translation myself, word for word. But I will say that the documents you find, and I'm going to quote one right here for you to show you, are not written in a metaphoric language or a symbolic language, the prophecies of Notre Dame.
Yes.
No, they're written in a very direct psychological language, which leaves, if you look closely at the exact meaning of the words, I think it leaves no doubt that these are concrete descriptions that can be taken as such, and you don't have to get into layers of symbolic interpretation.
Okay, read me one.
Let me give you an example of from the what's called the Gospel of Truth, in which the writer is describing the archons and the mentality of the archons. He's saying they are ignorant of the source, for the source is something that they cannot see. And so it is through terror and disturbance, through instability, doubt, and division, and many illusions they implant as empty fictions in our minds, that they work. And they work at their best when we are sunk in sleep and find ourselves in disturbing dreams. So this is not like something that you have, this is not symbolic language, this is psychological language.
Right.
And quite precise, and I would say that, I assure you that the great part of the Nag Hammadi material is like that.
John, were these your expectations when you began researching this material? Is this what you thought you would find, or what were your expectations when you began this research?
Oh, that's a beautiful question, Art. Thank you for that. I had the good fortune of coming across Gnosticism and the subject of the Gnostic teachings and the mysteries, pagan mysteries, when I was quite young, around 16 or 17. I was deeply intrigued, but I didn't really know how to get into it. You know, it seemed like a very remote and strange world.
Uh-huh.
And I did come to Europe for the first time when I was about 19 or 20, and I did kind of stumble my way into a number of ancient sites, and it affected me very deeply, but I couldn't articulate what I was feeling. So when my quest became conscious, there were two moments when my quest in Gnosticism became conscious. The first one was in my late 20s, when I realized that the Gnostics had a vision of the cosmos that was different from what I had been taught about from the Bible and from Christianity.
Yes.
They had an alternative cosmology and a whole alternative spiritual practice to go with it. So that really jolted me. And then, I can tell you exactly when it was, and I thank our Wiccan friend there for pointing out the fact that this is the spring equinox. On the spring equinox in 1996, I was sitting very close to where I am right now, and suddenly, as the saying goes, the big penny dropped.
Oh, really?
And that's the moment when I realized that the archons of which the Gnostics speak and on which they present such specific information could be equated with E.T. Greys and aliens as we know it. When those two things came together, it was an enormous jolt for me. And at that moment, I realized that that is the point that I had actually been advancing toward all along.
Well, prior to that point, John, what was your involvement in ufology or looking at the whole alien scene or any of the rest of it?
I've had a long, long involvement in it, mainly through a close friend of mine, Kathy Sullivan, who lives in California. And we, for many, many years, going back more than 25 years now, were initially fascinated, you know, as many people are, by the great megaliths around the world, the pyramids, in Mexico, in Egypt, and so forth. And we wondered how they could have been built by human engineers,
mm-hmm.
you know. So we began to speculate on whether or not there had been some kind of superior technology involved that might have come from an alien source. And, of course, then there was the Von Daniken and material and that sort of thing.
All of that sort of
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
So I've been on that track for about 25 years, but that track sort of ran parallel, you see, to my Gnostical studies.
Got it.
Until a certain point when the two things converged.
All right. Yeah. I understand that in the text, in the Gnostic text, there is no description of a lot of what we see, the hardware stuff, you know, the metal saucers, the hardware,
That's right. You're absolutely right about that. And this is such an important point, because I think that to really get the message of the Gnostics about alien intrusion, we need to see what it says and what it doesn't say, to see what it tells us and what it doesn't tell us. There's hardware and there's software. The hardware is the flying machines, the discs, the cigar-shaped discs, the
right.
whatever you want, the Pleiadian light ships, whatever you want to call them. And as a matter of fact, there are many pagan sources of reports of this hardware, but not in the Nag Hammadi materials themselves, but in other writings by pagan teachers in the Middle Ages, because mm-hmm. paganism survived into the Middle Ages. And many, many of these events occurred, as you probably know, around the time of Christ. There were enormous amounts of sightings. For instance, the historian who accompanied Alexander the Great on his expeditions, his personal historian, recorded a battlefield scene in which UFO-type vehicles appeared above the battlefield.
Really?
Yeah. So if you want to go back, sort of as Jacques Vallée did, and go into the make an inventory of hardware sightings in before the Christian era and during the Christian era, you'll find many, many, many of them. why don't we find any reference to this hardware in the Nag Hammadi writings?
Well, that'd be my question.
Question is because the Gnostics believed that what we needed to know was about the software side, not the hardware side. We needed to know about how the aliens work in our minds.
Well, you know, one would imagine that the Archons, as you have described them, wouldn't need hardware, or would they?
I don't believe they do. That would be my conclusion. I believe they have hardware. I believe that exterior to the Earth, that in the mechanics of the, you know, the solar system is a big place.
Yes.
You know, and there's a lot of raw materials out there. They're not the kind of raw materials that we can live on. But there's a lot of inorganic materials out there, and the Archons are described as kind of engineers and technicians who live in the solar system and kind of sustain it. They kind of live in the structure that they maintain. And so they do have that engineering possibility, but that's not the real threat. Gnostics were concerned about warning us about the way that they intrude upon our minds, into our mental software, into the syntax of our language and our belief systems, and they go into that in great detail.
Okay. So the hardware was there, but it was no big deal. They were much more concerned with the intrusion into the mind, or I guess, again, if you're looking at their motives, we started talking about motives.
That's right, yeah.
And their interest in our mind would perhaps explain what they seem to do, this jealousy, is that the right
envy
word?
Envy is the word.
Envy.
Phonos is the Greek word. Envy is this word that occurs again and again, and it's such, I've reflected so much on what this can mean, you know, the aliens, the ETs envy us. What does this mean? Well, as you noted in the previous segment, it does seem to correspond, explain a lot of their behavior. They scrutinize us, they cause us to go into emotional states, they traumatize us. Why? It would seem to be so that they can observe these emotions as if they were able to absorb them and make them their own.
Or perhaps even utilize them as a source of some kind of energy. Who knows?
Well, this is another thing. The Gnostic texts are specific in saying that the Archons feed on fear.
They feed on fear.
That's right, and that is textual art. I'm not extrapolating that or making that up. That is textual.
They feed on fear, I wonder...
In human beings.
They feed on
our fear.
Yes, I understand. Study it or to utilize it, I wonder.
It's a kind of energy that gives them a kick. It's like it's like a drug.
Yes.
Yeah. Fear is their drug, human fear. And so the word terror, which I think was contained in the little passage I just read, occurs frequently in the Egyptian text. And they are connected with, it's a very interesting play on words. The Archons are connected with terror and error.
And what do we have today? A war on what?
We have a war on terror that may be greatly in error.
Oh, God, that was good, John. Okay. You want to take off with that one? A war on terror that may be greatly in error.
Well, I'm going to take a little stretch here for a minute. Just see if this extrapolation, is valid for you. One of the things that we have observed, I'm just going to talk about something that we observe in our world today, okay?
Mm-hmm, sure.
On the political and global scale. And then I'm going to draw a parallel to that, to what the Gnostics said about Archon methods.
Yes.
We understand that governments, a government, even if it disguised itself as a democracy, who wanted to control its people, could do it very effectively by making them fear things that weren't really going to happen.
Oh, yes.
And as long as the fear was real, it wouldn't matter if the threatened event was real or not. So there's a psychological technique of mind control that we all recognize, I think, pretty clearly right now. I don't have to elaborate that any further. Well, among the things that the Gnostics specified about the alien methods of mind control and intrusion was their use of simulation. Now, this word simulation is extremely important in the Nag Hammadi materials. The actual Coptic word is hal, H-A-L. And this term hal means to simulate something, to make something appear to happen that does not actually happen. And Gnostics specified from their encountering with these beings and their study of how these beings work that they do have one particular power over us. They can enter into our minds by some kind of telepathy, you might say, in such a way that they can persuade us that things are real which are not real. They can simulate a reality.
Do you have an example of what you might mean by that?
Sure. Let's consider abductions. Now, we're all trying to figure out how these abductions take place because they're obviously real to the people who experience them.
Yes.
And I would never deny or dismiss the experience of those people. But what we wonder is, well, how can it be real? Because the things that happen in the abduction, for instance, being sucked out of a room and into a spacecraft, defy the laws of physics as we know it, right?
Correct, yes.
According to the Gnostics, this ability for hal, or simulation, is the highest ability that the aliens have. They can, in fact, induce a virtual reality situation. We know now that we might be able to create a virtual reality. I mean, we're playing around with it, right?
We are, yes.
I believe that there are probably... there's probably a technology that would allow you to put on a virtual reality helmet and gloves and stand in a box and almost experience skiing in the Alps.
It's crude, but it's...
Right.
Yes, we're proceeding.
Well, so we know what that is. Imagine that there is another species who can do that, and it ain't crude. This is how.
All for what? All for the purpose of creating this sphere that we're talking about that they feed upon?
Well, seems to be a dual purpose here. Certainly, if they can create fear in us and invoke terror, they get some kind of high off that. There does seem to be a drug there for them. But secondly, let's remember that they are envious of us, and everything that they do at the end of the day comes down to an attempt that they make to sort of get into our heads, get into our emotions, and become like us, because we have things that they don't have. The really weird part of the story is that their attempt to do that is totally absurd.
Well,
because they can't succeed.
But they're driven to keep
trying.
Driven
to do it anyway. For me, you know, one of the things that was most enlightening after I made the Archon alien connection, and then I started to read a lot of Jacques Vallée, and at one point, I think it's in Messengers of Deception, Jacques Vallée says, the way to a man's belief is through absurdity. And that really struck me as a very revealing comment, because from what I can make out of the alien behavior, alien Archon behavior, it's really quite absurd. And I think that...
Well, maybe, John, but if the motive of the aliens is explained as their envy for us, they're wanting to essentially replace us or even become us.
Right.
We're saying it's a silly agenda and they can't do it, but what if we're wrong, John? What if it is achievable?
Well, this is a big question that we live with.
Yes, it certainly is. I mean, how can you write off their ability to finally actually accomplish that? Maybe they do have a meaningful goal. How are we writing that off?
Well, we have to be very careful about writing that off. I totally agree with you.
Uh-huh.
But again, I'm trying to translate and convey to the best of my ability what Gnostics said. As far as I understand it, they said there is no possibility that they can really take us over that they can really come in and take over our reality. But we can, in a sense, give over our power to them. We can do that.
Same end effect, John. They get it.
Possibly the same end effects. You could well be right on that.
All right, hold on.
It's very important to realize that it didn't happen because they overpowered us. If it happens, it will happen because we abdicate our own proper powers and capacities to them.
Well, gee, that's
a totally different story.
That could never happen, huh? People giving up or gaining security for just giving up a little bit of freedom, that could never happen. Hey, listen,
that could never happen.
We're here at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be right back. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM in the nighttime.
With Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Who loves you, baby? Well, the scaly ones and the grays, they love you. Just a wonderful connection with John Lash, all the way in Belgium, and in very much more than just one way. John, I've got a question from Stephen in Boulder, Colorado, and a good question at this juncture. He asks, how about asking your guest, Art, to comment on human-alien hybrids? It's right down the road we were going.
Right down the road. In fact, some of your listeners are highly telepathic. I can see that. I was going to say that we've covered, quite a few aspects of alien intrusion as understood by these pagan shamans and seers.
Yes.
There is the one real zinger that remains, and that is the interbreeding question. And so what I would like to do, I have a gem here that I'd love to share with you. This is also from the Nag Hammadi text, and it's from a particular document called On the Origin of the World. Now, this document uses a little bit, slight bit of mythological language in that it refers to Adam and Eve. Mm. Now, I think we should understand that Adam and Eve, it means the human ancestors of the human race, that's all. Our genetic parents at some earlier time. And the passage describes the attempted approach of the aliens to our parents. And if you will, I'd like to just read this passage.
Let her rip.
The Archons came to Adam And when they saw Eve talking with Adam, they said to one another, well, what sort of thing is this luminous woman? For she resembles a brilliant likeness we saw in the sky. Now come, let us lay hold of her and cast our seed into her, so that she becomes soiled, and she may not ascend into that light. Rather, those whom she bears for us will be under our charge and under our control.
Boy, there you've got it.
But what, that's the first part of the story. Now here you have, in a document written by some anonymous seer and teacher in the mystery schools 2,000 years ago, a report of an alien attempt at interbreeding.
No question about it.
No question about it. Clear as day. But once again, the extraordinary thing about these Gnostics is, I tell you, they really deliver the goods. Because not only do they tell you this, but they tell you something else, which I think is even more amazing. So can I read the second part of the passage?
Go right ahead.
Okay. Rather, those whom she bears for us will be under our charge and under our control. Okay, so there, that's their intention. And let us not tell Adam, for he is not one of us. We will plunge him into a deep sleep. And in our sleep, we will instruct him to the effect that Eve came out of his rib in order that she, his wife, might obey him, and that he may be lord over her, and we may be lord over him. Then Eve, being a spiritual force, recognized the archons, and she laughed at their intention. She put mist into their eyes, and secretly she left her double in their presence, while she entered Gnosis and ascended to the light. The Gnostics pursued her, but they were unable to seize upon Eve.
So that's when the woman's movement got born.
That is the moment when it got born, sometime in prehistory. We now know that it has been around a long time. And the amazing thing about that passage is that the Gnostics are telling us, if I interpret this correctly, and I think here you can see that this is not symbolic or obscure language, they're saying that the Archons wished to interbreed. They wished to intrude in our genetic makeup. That is to say, to sow their seed in Eve.
Then where...
they couldn't do it.
Yes, where, John...
They failed.
Where, John, and how, John, do we deal with these modern reports of women with pregnancies that are terminated and then later are shown the results of those pregnancies, John? We have a lot of that in the modern world.
Indeed, we do. I've read Jacob's books. I have been staggered by what I've read, as I think everyone has. And I will not sit here in Belgium or in any other country in the world and pretend to you that I have the ultimate answer to that and I can explain it all away. I will only say that human beings in their imagination are capable of affecting their own bodies, as you know.
Yes.
Stigmata is, for instance, an
yes.
example of a religious experience.
Of course.
And we have a mind-body connection that the Archons can't even get close to, but they can meddle with our mind-body connection, perhaps, and cause phenomena to occur in the mind-body zone that perhaps make these events happen. I'm sure these events are very real. I have complete respect and compassion for the people who experience them. At the same time, I follow the Gnostic view that all this is happening because there is some alien force intruding in our minds that is so affecting our reality that it makes us believe things that are not so.
All so. With the goal in mind of taking the energy from the shock and the wonderment and the amazement of this event that they've created.
Exactly. Isn't that how envy works?
Huh. Well, I guess it does work that way sometimes,
yeah.
Yes, sometimes, sure.
And yet we know also that envy is ultimately very frustrating, you know, like I might envy Brad Pitt, you know, but if I was able to take over his life and be in his place, I wouldn't handle it very well because I'm not Brad Pitt. And so this is pretty much the situation with the aliens. They are not us, but they would like to become us. and we may give them the opportunity to do so, as you very, very astutely observed, you know. No chance that people would give up their freedom, you know, for a little security, is there?
So these beings, if and when they're in some kind of physical form, are not able, for example, to breathe our atmosphere, our combination of gases.
That's exactly right.
On Earth.
Their position is more or less like we would be in if we were doing deep sea diving, especially in the really, really deep part of the sea where you have to go in these armored vehicles, and we can only be down there for a very short period of time. That is comparable to what they must tolerate when they try physically to permeate the biosphere. They cannot live in the biosphere. They are inorganic beings who don't breathe air. It's been suggested that they have the gray cyborgs have a silicon mercury type of composition. And in any case, it's not physical. It's not physical intrusion that is their main intention.
Uh-huh. And so they don't have to be close to achieve that.
No, they don't have to be. It's done at a distance. Done by mind, by telepathy, I believe. You know, we recognize now that there is such a thing as interspecies telepathy, right?
Yes.
People have it with their pets. I mean,
yes.
There are extraordinary stories. We now know that certain people have been able to communicate with wolves, dolphins, or whales. Well, there is a kind of interspecies telepathy that has been going on for thousands of years between the Archons and the human race. And it's now playing itself out in a very critical chapter.
Well, but then again, it is not so bad that we would be described as puppets on strings, even though perhaps at times it would seem that way. You're saying that we have all these different freedoms and emotions and passions and drives and goals that we try and achieve that are separate and much beyond their ability to even understand, much less intervene in.
That's right. That's right. When it comes to understanding the actual complexity of the human mind and how we are goal-driven and how we can envision and create things through imagination and intention, they're rather like donkeys trying to figure out a grand piano. And the other thing, I think if I had to sum up the whole essence of what the Gnostics are saying about the Archons, in one sentence, in four words, I would say the Archons are delusional. And those who become enmeshed with them become delusional. The word Archon is used, as I've said, in a special way in these Gnostic texts, but it was a very common word in the Greco-Latin world.
John? Based on what you just said, then, would you agree that perhaps a large percentage of those who are in mental institutions around the world are so affected?
Wow, that would be a big swipe. I would say that the Archon intrusion probably has played and does play a great role in mental illness. But I would add to that, having said that, I would say that these people who can be defined as mentally ill may be actually perceiving the reality of the Archons, but they are not able to interpret it or handle it. And that's why the Gnostics considered it so important in their training schools, which were called the Mysteries, to teach the neophytes how to face the Archons, how to defend themselves against the Archons. So I think that Philip K. Dick is a beautiful example, and as you probably know, he absorbed a tremendous amount of Gnostic material.
Yes.
And he had a Gnostic illumination experience himself in March of 1974. His book, Valis, is a beautiful introduction to Gnosticism. And in that, he shows that a schizophrenic who is himself can have these perceptions that the Gnostics have, but if they're not trained to handle them properly, it can lead to some very serious mental disturbances, yes.
Hmm. Our present concept of Gaia, the living planet, may be crucial to realize what the Gnostics were saying. Now, is that what you embrace, the living planet? Is that what you believe?
Well, if you look on the website metahistory.org, which I've been writing now since 2002, you will see that it begins with a rather bold mission statement regarding Gaia and the living planet. And the reason for that presence of that message on the site is because one of the purposes of MetaHistory.org, not the only one, but one of the purposes is to recreate, based on the original materials, the Gnostic creation myth. And in the Gnostic creation myth, which I'm drawing from the Nag Hammadi materials and some other sources, the central figure of their myth is the goddess Sophia, who becomes embodied in the planet Earth. The reason why the Earth is a living entity and the rest of the planets in the solar system are not, according to Gnostics, is because the Earth is actually the body of a divine being called Sophia. So I make this connection between Gaia and Sophia. I strongly feel that the growing understanding of Gaia since about 1975, it's about 30 years now, is actually going to bring us to the point where it converges precisely with the Gnostic myth of Sophia. So I've attempted to describe that myth and explain and interpret that myth all throughout the site, MetaHistory.org.
I'm curious how you react to the current Earth changes underway. Some of them seem really quite incredible in the climate changes, the geological action, the volcanoes, just a lot of things happening around the Earth right now that seem, progressively dire from a human point of view.
Indeed they do.
Yes.
Well, there is no evidence, as far as I know, from the Gnostic angle, that the Archons, even though they have a greater command of planetary physics than we do, if I might put it in that way, you know.
Yes.
That they could affect our planet in a catastrophic manner. However, in an indirect manner, they could.
Well, does their existence to some degree must depend on our survival?
It does, right.
Yes, so to the degree that they're able to interfere and direct us in one way or another, are they doing so?
Well, as I said before, I think the best thing to remember, the essential thing to remember in the Gnostic message here is that the Archons are in themselves delusional. And I know that's a big, big statement to make, and I would just have to direct your listeners to the website in order to get a deeper explanation of that. But to the extent that they are delusional, they can cause us to be delusional. And what Gnostics saw as the greatest danger of delusion of our species is when we lose our connection with Gaia, the living planet. That's why paganism, which is, you know, a terrible stereotype, and in some ways reticent to use the word, but ancient paganism was the religion of nature in which human beings had a profound connection to the planet and saw it as intelligent and divine. And so there's a place where Gnosticism converges with the Gaia hypothesis. And through the Gaia hypothesis, we may be coming into a bond, a conscious bond with Gaia. The Gnostics said that is the most important thing in the world for us, obviously, I mean, because we need to co-evolve with the planet we inhabit. Everything that takes us away from that co-evolution is delusional and can have catastrophic effects in the environment.
Here in America, wouldn't the closest thing to it be perhaps Native American thought?
Well,
I believe that in the 1800s, a lot of people breaching the New West and killing as they went. American natives referred to them as dirt worshippers.
Right. Well, the pagans were dirt worshippers. You know, you're it's an almost telepathic remark there, Art. In my book, that's The Gnostic Legacy, which will be coming out from Chelsea Green in the fall, I open the book with a reference to Dee Brown's book, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, and which came out in the 70s. And I use this term Native Americans. Now, you know, everyone now knows what Native Americans are, thanks to Dee Brown and other writers, and they also know what was done to Native Americans.
Yes.
And if I say to you that the Native Americans who existed before the Europeans arrived in America had an indigenous spiritual wisdom, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do.
Well, pagans were Native Europeans. They were the exact parallel. Pagan civilization before the era of Christ, say 600 B.C. or 1000 B.C., consisted of a vast mosaic of tribal cultures that were shamanically oriented, exactly like the confederacy of tribes that the Europeans encountered when they came to America. It's an exact parallel. Native Europeans were pagans. That's how I define the word pagan. And their religion was earth-oriented or Gaia-oriented. So it's out of that consciousness that the Gnostic knowledge came.
Well, it seems reasonable to me, and I've always rather thought that the American natives had, even though that was a derisive term used then, dirt worshippers, really, I don't know, it makes sense to me, and I think it makes sense to a lot of other people as well.
I think it does, and one of the things that I've learned from the study of Native American wisdom and from discussing some of the people who represent it, the survivors, is that they also were sophisticated shamans who had a perception of many types of interdimensional beings that interact with us. And because they were able to perceive these beings, they had the psychic ability. They were also able to determine which of those beings were predatory and which were benign or neutral. That's an extremely important point.
By the way, should we be thinking of Archons as interdimensional beings? Is that fair?
I think that that's a fair term to apply to them, as long as we stick to the Gnostic description, which says that they sprang up with the solar system. They are coeval.
Got it.
With the solar system, yeah.
All right, all right. Hold it right there.
Sure.
And we'll be right back. And when we do come back, we'll go to the phones. Remember, we're talking all the way to Belgium, so in a moment, it will begin.